Production support from the American Society of Plant Biologists.
Today's program was prepared by Sue Ann Zollinger with help from Ian Matthews at St. Andrews University, Scotland. I'm Yael Cassander.
And I'm Don Glass.
Support for WILL comes from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods, 6th and University in Champaign. Now serving dine-in, lunch, and dinner daily from 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., featuring a Middle Eastern menu along with hot soup, Turkish coffee, and herbal teas. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio.
It's 2:41 in sports. Top-ranked Serena Williams has been upset by 95th-ranked Clara Zakopalova of the Czech Republic in a clay court tournament in Spain. Zakopalova won 6-4, 3-6, 6-1. She converted 7 break points in defeating the 2009 Australian Open champion. Williams won less than half of her service points. The Chicago Blackhawks can clinch home ice advantage in the opening round of the playoffs with a win over the Columbus Blue Jackets this evening. The Chicago White Sox host the Kansas City Royals. The St. Louis Cardinals host the Pirates, and the Cubs are in Houston to play the Astros. All 3 of those games under the lights tonight. And the last day of practice at Augusta National ahead of tomorrow's start of the Masters also includes the annual Par 3 tournament. It's a lighthearted affair with family members and friends caddying and sometimes hitting shots for their pro. No one has won the Wednesday event and gone on to claim a green jacket on Sunday. That's sports.
Programs on WILL AM are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to experience Maritza, the critically acclaimed fado singer, on April 15th. More information is at KrannertCenter.com.
It's 2:42. 3 Democratic members of Congress had a rare meeting yesterday in Cuba with Fidel Castro. It's Castro's first known encounter with American elected officials since he fell ill in 2006. The congressman came away convinced that the Cuban government wants to end half a century of hostile relations with the U.S. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports.
Congresswoman Barbara Lee of California says she's met with Fidel Castro many times in years past, and on this trip, she found him to be as talkative as ever.
He has been ill, but I think we will agree that he was very healthy, very energetic, and very clear-thinking and engaging.
The setting was Fidel Castro's home, which Bobby Rush, a congressman from Illinois, pointed out was more modest than one might think.
We didn't go into some magnificent estate. He had a very modest home, and we were met at the front door by his lovely wife, and she was a very warm person, so it was almost like visiting an old friend.
He says they talked a lot about Martin Luther King. Castro also apparently told the members of the Congressional Black Caucus that he wants to help President Obama succeed. The delegation did not meet with Cuban dissidents on this trip. The lawmakers spent 4.5 hours with President Raul Castro over dinner one night. And Congresswoman Lee says she's convinced that it's time for the new U.S. administration to open a dialogue with Cuba.
We have this window of opportunity now. We are in the process of reshaping our image and our role in the world, and where better to do that than 90 miles off the shores of America?
President Obama is preparing to go to the Summit of the Americas in Trinidad and Tobago later this month, and many in the region are hopeful that he will make some overtures to Cuba. The White House advisor on the summit, Jeffrey Davido, told reporters at the State Department this week that President Obama is expected to ease some of the restrictions that the Bush administration put in place.
We can expect some relaxation in changes in terms of the restrictions on family remittances and family travel. This does not include a lifting of the embargo.
What this means is that Cuban Americans will soon be able to travel more easily to visit their families back on the island and send money to relatives. That's a nice gesture, says Carl Meacham, an advisor to the ranking Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Richard Lugar. But Meacham says he and Senator Lugar would like to see the Obama administration do something more, name a special envoy on Cuba, and open up a more serious dialogue.
We're looking for specific issues so we can actually make headway on some issues. Migration, for instance, on the cooperation on drug trafficking. I mean, we all want to get to a situation here where we can talk about some of the more contentious issues like human rights. That's an important issue, and greater freedoms for Cubans.
He says the White House hasn't responded to Lugar's letter, but Fidel Castro has been praising the Republican senator from Indiana, and Meacham says that's a positive sign.
They found the senator's letter and idea important enough to respond to it.
Still, many in Congress oppose any move that could reward a repressive government that has changed little despite the transfer of power from Fidel Castro to his brother. David Au, the White House advisor, says Cuba remains an undemocratic state and because of that won't be part of the upcoming Summit of the Americas. There will be other delegations to watch, including Venezuela and Bolivia, both friends of Cuba. David Au says President Obama's goal is to develop good working relations with everyone in the hemisphere.
We would like to see our diplomatic interchange with all of the countries at the highest possible level. It's unfortunate that the governments of Venezuela and Bolivia themselves made the decision to expel our ambassadors. That's an unnatural situation, and we hope that that will change.
Asked whether President Obama will meet with Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez, David Au said that the summit will offer, as he put it, ample opportunity for private discussions among the regional leaders. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, Washington.
You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. How often have you wanted to take a photograph of something that required you to get up close, really close? The first flowers of spring, frost on a window, the web of a spider, a shell lying on a beach. You think, this will make a great photo. Then, it doesn't turn out so well. This afternoon, we're going to get some tips about how to get great close-up shots. We'll also hear how we might expand our close-up interest to include subjects other than flowers and butterflies. Our guest is a photographer, teacher, and the author of 6 books on photography. His name is Brian Peterson, and his most recent book is Understanding Close-Up Photography, Creative Encounters with or Without a Macro Lens. Brian Peterson, hi.
Hello, Celeste.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. You describe yourself as addicted to close-up photography. Why is it so addictive?
Well, because it's a truly unexplored world. Unlike things such as a landscape or a cityscape, which are all too familiar, I suppose. And yet at every turn with the right close-up equipment, there's a new image that reveals itself that for most is have never seen before.
Yeah. You say in close-up photography, more is more. What do you mean?
Well, more is more, meaning kind of like what I just said. Yeah. Like one turn leads to another, and you think, okay, it can't get better than this. And you scoot ahead a little few inches on that sandy beach or even in your own living room carpet, and all of a sudden you find something else that's even perhaps more interesting.
Boy, I don't know if I want to get too close up to the carpeting at this moment.
No, I would agree. But,
yeah.
There are some things that are perhaps a little more shocking and rather you not reveal than others. But
yeah. Well, that's a wonderful point to get us to close-ups of things that are less conventional than flowers and butterflies, as I mentioned.
Sure.
Maybe you'd describe for us a photo of an unconventional subject in the book that you found particularly fascinating or pleasing.
Well, of course, the book does clearly address, the flowers and butterflies,
mm-hmm.
but the intent as well of the book is to go far beyond what I call the obvious close-up opportunities. And an example of where this lends itself to a host of opportunities is oftentimes something like a junkyard. And in my experiences, this has always been a rich opportunities for what I call mining new images. And in particular, I know there's a number of images like this in the book, but one in particular that I had so much fun doing was the emblem. It's a hologram emblem for the Honda Motor Vehicle Company. And I found this, just the letter H in a circular shape sitting on the ground at an automobile junkyard and began to explore it very close up. And actually walked away with an image that you have no idea it's even the letter H, but instead it's a very abstract image that has a somewhat rainbow effect from the hologram, combined with that the bright colors of red and silver that the emblem was made of. And anyone who looks at that would not have a clue. In fact, no one ever is able to guess what its original state was. And it's images like that that when I do my workshops with students, every time I announce we're going to a junkyard, which happens on occasion, there's tremendous moaning and groaning. And why did I sign up for this for? What are we doing? And quite honestly, at the end of the afternoon, you have to pull them away and say it's time to go. No, I don't want to go to the beach and shoot a sunset. I want to stay here.
Yeah.
So, well, it's fun.
Yeah, and one of the amazing things about the book is as you go page to page, there's so many surprises here. I'm particularly enamored of a freight door that you photographed. The colors and the textures are just amazing.
Yeah, and again, I was just outside here in my recent walk in my own neighborhood, having just recently moved to Chicago from Europe. I was living in France for 10 years, and so I'm getting reacquainted with the American culture and whatnot. And there's so many alleyways in this city, and I was just yesterday, in fact, working an alleyway no further than a street for me, and came across, ironically, an interesting garage door. That belongs to a auto repair shop, and unbeknownst to them, they've got some tremendous fine art on that door. So, anyway, and the classic example, which happens so often, because we find ourselves looking at the world so close up that the average observer, as they walk by, in this case, one of the mechanics that happened to come outside in the alleyway to, have a lunch, sitting in a bench nearby. And he came over and he said, I'm just curious, what on earth are you looking at? And I said, oh, this is truly a masterpiece in the making. Thanks to you, I'm just the guy who's coming along to capture it. And he took a look through the camera and he said, that's on my door? And I said, yeah, it's right here. And he goes, how'd you do that? And again, it's relative to once, again, having that close-up lens.
Yeah. And then I have the freight door photograph in front of me with wonderful hues of blue and orange and brown and rust and whatnot. And you turn the page, and there's an amazing close-up taken indoors of some forks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm never going to look at when I do the dishes again. I think I might want to get out of camera.
Yeah, I've had many students in the online school, the PPSOP.com school that I'm that I started a couple years ago, take the macro class, and they're very quick to take that particular exercise, which is anything that's metallic, in this case like a fork. And I tell them just to grab some old birthday or Christmas wrapping paper, if you have any, and put it off at an angle near a north or a south window, preferably, and get the lens out and now look at that same fork. And almost without fail, the responses are much like you described. And I've had students say, I'm sitting here doing the dishes, and the dishwasher's not working, or they don't have one, and the soap bubbles all of a sudden become an absolute fascination. And I had one woman tell me that she was making dinner and got sidetracked by the bubbles, and needless to say, her family had to go to McDonald's because she burnt everything because she forgot about dinner.
It is addictive.
Yeah, very much so.
You know, the point-and-shoot digital camera is very popular, and I suspect it's very friendly for most folks. They can be used to make close-up photographs. You've got a portion of the book devoted to the point-and-shoot digital. Are some of these cameras better than others for this work, and what features should we look for?
Well, the thing that's really critical, particularly as you described the point-and-shoots, is that the camera offers an absolute close focus capability. And more often than not, this is indicated by so many of these cameras they profess to be truly automated, and that's a different subject altogether. But if it has usually a flower symbol on the dial, it's an indication that it's intended to shoot close-ups. There's only a few cameras, however, that truly perform to take what I consider to be these wonderful abstract close-ups. And unfortunately, those few cameras that are out there, they're not in that $200 or $300 price range, or even the $100 price range. You're in the $400 to $500 real quick.
Yeah.
And I can just mention briefly, there's the Canon G9 and my favorite, which is the Leica Deluxe 4. That particular camera will focus down to 1/3 of an inch, believe it or not.
Hmm.
So,
if we have an SLR camera and would like to get a lens or two for close-up work, what do you recommend?
Oh, that's the beauty of it. SLR is freedom reigns because
yeah.
you have so many choices, and in particular, you can spend a minimal amount of money, and you can get a set of three of those. The manufacturer I recommend is Kenko, K-E-N-K-O. And the likes of these large camera mail order houses certainly have the best price point. Places like Adorama.com in New York, you can get a set of Kenko extension tubes for $149. You can spend about between $90 and $130 on Canon's 500D, like David, close-up lens that fits on the front of any lens. They intend it for the telephoto, but you can use it on most any lens. And that, too, will provide you some wonderful close-up opportunities. And then the person who truly has that serious addiction is going to make a run for what we call the macro lens itself, which is a lens that will focus all the way from infinity down to what we call a life-size reproduction. And my recommendation, you have those available in 60 millimeter, 100, 105 millimeters, and then there's the 180 and the 200, depending upon the manufacturer. But those will cost you anywhere from $600 to $1,000.
Mm. One last question, and I got to ask for a quick answer. Any tips for dealing with the wind?
Yeah, absolutely. You can oftentimes use what we call a reflector, not to reflect light, but to block the wind. And those work very well, quite honestly.
Okay. That's another bane of the close-up photographer, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it's not something you're going to shoot on windy days.
Yeah, okay. There we have to leave it. Brian, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Brian Peterson is a photographer, teacher, and the author of 6 books on photography, including Understanding Close-Up Photography, Creative Encounters with or Without a Macro Lens.
Earth and Sky.
Congress has asked the U.S. National Academy of Sciences to conduct special studies through the year 2010 focused on climate change. Here's National Academy of Sciences President Ralph Cicerone speaking at a March 2009 summit centered on America's climate choices.
This is a study that was requested by the United States Congress basically to analyze the latest information on climate and to give some policy guidance to the federal government on what actions they should take to deal with climate change, to limit its scope, and then also to adapt to whatever does happen.
Cicerone said the urgency to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from the burning of fossil fuels is clear.
Well, it's really long overdue. Probably what's going to be required is a series of actions, a lot of them having to do with energy efficiency.